The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
When Jewish blood is again flowing in the streets of Israel, and you have everybody over the age of 35 is still, you know, suffering from PTSD from the Palestinian terror war in the early years of this century, you know, from 2000 to 2004, 2005. I think that this government is going to have a very hard time not responding, and it won't respond. It can't, because of the way that it's built, because of its members, its composition. And I think that it won't be 4 years before we see new elections in Israel. I think it will be much faster.
Well, was she right? That was Israeli journalist Carolyn Glick talking about the impending demise of the Israeli government led by Naftali Bennett. Carolyn Glick, you might have seen her numerous times in the past. She's somebody we quote very often. That was April 4th when she said that. April 6th, we saw a shot across the bow on Naftali Bennett's government with one of his own Yamina party members defecting, bringing his ruling coalition down from 61 seats in the 120-seat Knesset to 60, basically robbing him of any majority in the Knesset, any ability to pass legislation, and really was the death knell on his government. I'm Brent Nachtigall. You're joining us today for the Trumpet Daily. I'm filling in for Mr. Stephen Fleury from here in Jerusalem, Israel. Thank you very much to him for letting me take today's show. If you'd like to send some feedback on the program today or any other day, you can write your emails to td@thetrumpet.com. If you'd also like to watch the video of this program, if you're not watching it right now, you can go to thetrumpet.com/live. You can also catch the videos of past episodes of The Trumpet Daily there as well. So here we are in Israel, and the Israeli government led by Naftali Bennett has been in power for about 10 months, replacing the iconic Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of the Likud faction. And as we've talked about, and as we'll get into on today's program, this man has led the government by the very smallest of margins, just one seat in the Knesset. And it has been a hodgepodge of different parties that make up the coalition, his ruling coalition of 61 seats. I think there's six parties in his coalition. Yamina, which is his, right now only has 5 seats out of those 60. And so you can tell that his leadership is going to be neutered by the other members of his coalition. Most of the party is Yesh Atid, led by Yair Lapid. We'll talk about him on today's program. And then you even have an Arab party that is in this ruling coalition in Israel as well, which is one of the reasons why Israel's response to this current wave of violence has been quite inept. We are going to talk about Israel's government on today's program, but we also want to put it in the context of what's happening in the United States. And you'll see that they are connected, completely connected. Even the timing of this decision on April 6th, it was a Wednesday morning here, when Idit Sliman, I think her name is, or Silman, decided to leave the Knesset or leave the coalition of Naftali Bennett. Just that day, it was very interesting. I remember watching or reading the news of her leaving, basically saying it's the beginning of the end of Bennett. And then watching shortly before that, actually, Tucker Carlson's show. And you would have definitely seen this, these clips from Tucker Carlson this day. He was showing the footage of former President Barack Obama's visit to the White House. It showed fragile Mr. Biden walking around aimlessly at some points, and the crowd flocking around President Obama. It was clear who was the most powerful man in the room, and it wasn't Mr. Biden. Now, if you haven't watched Mr. Stephen Fleury's program from that Wednesday night, talking about what happened on Tuesday, April 4th, his program's entitled The Real Fake President. I suggest you go back and watch that. I think it was one of the most powerful programs that I've seen of late. Something that Tucker Carlson said towards the end of his program really caught my eye, especially in the context of what just happened, what was happening the same day in Israel. He said this.
So he understands how this ends. Inevitably, after 50 years, it is his turn to be eliminated. Will he scream for mercy like Beria did, or will he take it like a man? That's the only question. Biden can't lead. Therefore, at some point soon, he won't be allowed to lead. It's that simple.
So basically, the writing is on the wall. The writing is on the wall for Biden as of April 4th, April 5th. Soon to be, the Democrats are going to ditch him for somebody else, led by President Barack Obama, and decide who's going to rule or be the president. We don't really know how these details are going to work out. But according to Tucker Carlson, it was all over. And then the same day, a few hours later, we have Israel's left-wing government, ruled over by a right-wing puppet, suffer the same fate, or at least the descent to suffer that same fate started. This is how the Jerusalem Post characterized what happened with the removal or the leaving of Idit Silman from Bennett's coalition. They said this: no one could say with certainty how it would happen or when it will happen, but most agree that it is just a matter of time before Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's unique government is brought down. So while we don't have fresh elections announced yet in Israel, that's what it's headed towards. In the span of 24 hours, both in America and in Israel, it seemed like the leaders of the nation were put on notice that their time is about out or about up. Now, this is extremely interesting when you consider that both these nations, the United States and the nation of Israel, are very closely linked. They're closely linked not just in shared values, but shared history as well. And if you've been listening to this program for any length of time or listened to Herbert W. Armstrong for the decades preceding this, and Mr. Gerald Flurry, of course, for the last 30 years, you know the reason that these nations are experiencing similar problems right now and share a similar fate as well. This is based on the shared heritage of both these nations, and this is discussed in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. The United States and Britain in Prophecy, and you can certainly request a free book, that free book, by going to thetrumpet.com and hitting the literature tab and requesting that to prove that these nations are definitely family. Family. The modern nations of Israel. Now, when it comes to these governments, both in what's happening, the fake presidency of Biden, and then also Naftali Bennett, it's really interesting to consider some of these parallels between the two as we see both of them start to enter their demise. We know that Biden won an election through illegal means. He was the only viable candidate for the Democrat Party. Most Americans, over half of Americans, believe that he cheated. Mr. Bennett's rise, if you'll remember how it happened about 10 years ago and his claiming of the crown that was on the head of Netanyahu for so long, his rise to power was a little less sinister, but it still involved cheating. It still involved lying, but it was lying directly to the voters themselves. He didn't cheat at the ballot box. He cheated and defrauded his voters, the Israeli right, of their votes that they thought would be going towards a right-wing government. You'll recall about 15 months ago, it was now, that in the lead up to the election, we had an article on this at thetrumpet.com. This was called The Big Lie, I believe, in Israel's election. The Big Lie. Bennett gave several interviews. And you have to know that Naftali Bennett, he's always been in coalition, almost always been in coalition with his Yamina party, and Israel Home Party before then, with the right, the conservatives, with Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud faction. And Likud is actually more to the center, and Naftali Bennett and his party was more to the right. And so in all the elections previous to this, it was that if you vote for Naftali Bennett, you are voting for a strong right-wing government in Israel. And some of these voters, of course, most all of these voters, That would have, that vote for Naftali Bennett, if he came out and said, I'm not going to join with Netanyahu, instead, I'm going to join up with the leftists, I'm going to join up with Yesh Atid Lapid's party, I'm going to join up with an Arab party, they would not have voted for him. He wouldn't have received his, I think, 7 or 8 mandates, or 7 or 8 Knesset seats. He wouldn't have received it. He even went on national television signing a contract saying that he would not enter into an agreement or a coalition with Yesh Atid, Yair Lapid, the leader, even if it guaranteed him a prime ministership. He wouldn't do it. He would not enter into a government with an Arab party. He wouldn't do it because people thought he would do it. But here he is signing his bit of paper to say that he wouldn't go into a government that included the Islamists. So what did he do? Well, that's exactly what he did. After the election, he finds himself as the kingmaker in this coalition, and he gets Yair Lapid, who won by far, was the second leading vote getter in the election behind Netanyahu's Likud. He promised him, hey, join us. Join us. Join the left. Join this coalition. Of course, this coalition has some other right-wing parties as well that kind of defrauded themselves or defrauded their voters also. The akin to the Republicans in name only that we see in the United States. They joined on with this government. And then Bennett, of course, and his party, his small party, they decided to join in. With just 5% of the vote, he won 5% of the vote. And because of Lapid's good nature, Lapid let him take the prime ministership first. And after 2 years, the prime ministership would have been rotated to Yair Lapid. And so for the sake of 5% of the vote, this man became prime minister in Israel. This is what Netanyahu called the coalition agreement at the time. He said it was the greatest election fraud in Israeli history and in the history of democracies. He said that people should justifiably so feel that they have been conned. And indeed they were. They were conned. If he didn't lie to the public, if he didn't say that he would never join with the Islamist party in a coalition, then Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would still be in power today. But because of his lie, and because he wanted to grab the crown off Bibi's head and put it on his own, he sacrificed the votes of his own constituents for his own vanity, really. His chance to become prime minister. And immediately at that time, what did you see? Well, you saw people jump ship. Two of his members of the Knesset, the Yamina party, immediately jumped ship. And it would take a 10 months and some growing violence for Silman to leave as well. And now his government is on its last legs. And so really, this was a government. This was a government that came into power by defrauding voters. It was a government in Israeli politics. You vote for the right, thinking that the right-wing parties, at least most of them, are going to come together. Especially if they promise as such that they wouldn't go the other side. But that's what Naftali Bennett did. Of course, there's always wrangling that takes place and political maneuvering that takes place after an election when you've got something like 20 parties that are just under that, a dozen parties that make it to the Knesset, that get over the 3.5%. But who's seen such a thing? Where somebody that wins 5% of the vote is now going to be the prime minister of a country? The leader of a country? Who has seen it? And that's why Netanyahu called it one of the greatest frauds in history. And again, if he didn't lie, Netanyahu would likely be in power. But that's not what happened. By the good graces of Yair Lapid sacrificing himself for Naftali Bennett, the Never Bibi party, just like the Never Trump party in many ways, they got in power and they've been ruling for the past 10 years. So why did this lady leave the Knesset now, or leave at least not the Knesset, went to the opposition from the coalition? Well, she said technically that it was the government's decision the health minister's decision that doesn't belong, obviously not on the right, but in part of this coalition led by Bennett. It was their decision to allow leavened bread to enter state-run hospitals over Passover. Now, the mixture between religion and politics here, given that so much of the electorate is very concerned of religion and their beliefs, and believe in some ways that that should be reflected in the Jewish character of the state, this upset her. And so she used it as the reason that she was going to leave the party. But of course, the reasons are far bigger than that. As I said at the start, and as Carolyn Glick noted in that at the beginning, Israel is experiencing right now the worst, I hate calling an uptick in violence because it normalizes these terrorist attacks, but that's what we're seeing. There've been five or six terrorist attacks over the past 3 weeks that have killed Israelis, some of them perpetrated by Israeli Arabs, some of them perpetrated by Arabs from the West Bank that are getting into Israel proper, and they've got high-powered weapons. The latest attack took place on Saturday night in Tel Aviv's popular restaurant neighborhood. Two gunmen killed three young men. A third person succumbed to his wounds. Two people died on the spot. And then there was an incredible manhunt that took place down in Tel Aviv's CBD for a couple of hours. I'm just going to show you a clip of this from CBS New York. I was trying to find some type of English reporting that wasn't so biased against Israel, and it was very hard to do so online. But the best I could get was this report from CBS New York. Here it is.
And now to breaking news in Israel. What appears to be another terrorist attack has left two dead and several other injured.
The gunfire erupting in a busy area of Tel Aviv. CBS 2's Andrea Klein-Thomas in our newsroom now with the latest. Andrea.
Well, those shots were fired during the evening hours in a crowded area where there are bars and restaurants in central Tel Aviv. First responders received reports of shootings at multiple locations. Now, this video shows the chaotic aftermath outside one of the establishments. According to an Israeli hospital, at least two people were killed and eight others injured, many of them seriously. Another video shows law enforcement running to a scene. Now, this comes amid mounting tensions between Israelis and Palestinians. Authorities say attacks by Palestinians killed 11 people in Israel before the start of the holy month of Ramadan, which began last week. Now, the search for the gunman in the latest attack is underway right now. The motive is unknown.
So that was CBS New York from just Saturday night. And I was up trying to follow what was going on and just seeing footage of armed police units, armed military units, armed Israelis going around on the streets trying to hunt down this last terrorist was pretty shocking. And scenes like that are very reminiscent, as Carolyn Glick said at the top, about what happened 20 years ago. Just under two decades ago, and Israelis are worried. Now, these next couple of days actually look to be quite dangerous for what's going to happen, what could happen potentially in Jerusalem and beyond. Actually, right now, the violence in Jerusalem for the past 3 weeks, it hasn't been as intense or as extreme. These attacks have been happening in Tel Aviv, Bnei Brak, which is just inland from Tel Aviv, down south, Be'er Sheva, up towards the center in Hadera, and elsewhere in the country. But what we have tomorrow is the second Friday of Ramadan. This is the holy month of Islam. And I suspect it's meant to be a month of peace, but that's not what you see. That's not what you ever see. And what's going to happen after Friday prayers? Friday is more of their extra religious day. And so typically after Friday prayers and perhaps Friday night, once they can start eating again, there might be more violence. Now, this is what took place last night. If we could show that, what took place last night on the Temple Mount.
Yeah.
So some of the chants there too, they were talking about, they were pledging to protect the blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. And they were going to do so in spirit and blood. That's what this is about for many of the Muslims. They come in and during Ramadan, they talk about defending Al-Aqsa from Israelis. And now today there's all these reports about somebody, some guy was planning to sacrifice a goat onto, apparently get a goat onto the Temple Mount because it's going to be Passover tomorrow evening for them, on Friday evening for the Jews. And so here is Israel's media blowing up about how you got an extremist right-wing guy going to take a goat up to the Temple Mount and tick off all the Arabs, and it's going to end up in the Third Intifada. Of course, such a thing, Israeli police would never even allow it to happen. But it just feeds into the narrative for many of the Arabs that Israel is trying to conquer or take over the Temple Mount or anything of the like, which is so far from the truth. So you have like this perfect storm over the next couple of days. It's also going to be the Easter weekend as well, but then you can throw in the mix, you've got Passover, and then you throw in the mix also the second Friday of Ramadan. This is an article. This is yesterday. Jerusalem police on high alert ahead of Passover Seder, second Friday of Ramadan. The Israeli police have directed hotels across the country to ramp up security ahead of the Passover Seder, which this year falls on the second Friday of Ramadan. Amid the tense security situation in the country, there is concern that terrorist organizations are planning a repeat of the 2002 Passover bombing of the Park Hotel in Netanya on the coast, in which 30 people were killed and 140 were wounded. And so you have IDF forces that are backing up the Israeli police, an extra 1,300 of them. You have 3,000 officers that are now tasked walking around Jerusalem. An extra 3,000 to try and make sure the violence does not get out of hand. And so the violence that we've seen over the past 3 weeks, it doesn't look like it's going to be over yet. We'll see what happens over the next couple of days. But let's just get back to seeing what is happening with the Israeli government. And again, this violence does really make the right-wing elements inside this coalition need to defect, because this government is hamstrung. It's never going to come on too strong on many of the Arabs, because it has an Arab affiliate. It has an Arab party in its coalition, one that's affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood, of all things. And so you're not going to see a strong reaction. And so those right-wing elements inside this government that still care for their political future in the next election, they're bailing. They're going to leave. And the violence will only increase that. So before we, though, think about this is going to be an immediate return to elections, an immediate return to perhaps Prime Minister Netanyahu, I do think that's a good possibility to happen, of course, sometime in the future. But what's going to happen straight away? Now, it's hard to know exactly. However, if fresh elections are called, say there are another couple of people that defect, and there is a vote of no confidence inside the Knesset, where over half believe that elections should be called, then who becomes prime minister in the meantime? Now, this is very interesting, because instead of Naftali Bennett being the prime minister, the caretaker prime minister that will continue until through the election cycle, through the election, through the coalition wrangling, it's not going to be him. This is a process of months, 6 months. It's not going to be him. It's going to be Yair Lapid. When he signed this deal with Naftali Bennett, he said, you can have the first 2 years, but if at any time these right-wing elements of your party that you're bringing in bail from my government, and it's his government, that's who it is. It's not Naftali Bennett's government. He's the puppet. He's the right-wing figurehead. It's Yair Lapid's government. If one of Bennett's people bail, or another right-winger bails, and they're going to elections, then Yair Lapid becomes the interim prime minister. Now, you don't need to know too much about him. It would be hard to give a huge biography about him in this program, but Yair Lapid, he's they would call him center-left, but in terms of his ideology, he's basically an Israeli version of the American Democrat Party, a lot of his ideals. Of course, I would say he's a little bit tougher on security, a little bit tougher on Iran, than the current Democratic Party, or at least the Obama files inside Biden's administration. Nevertheless, if you look at some of the people that have trained Yair Lapid, that are in charge of his campaigns, Joel Benenson, one of the people in charge of Obama's campaign, was in charge of Yair Lapid's campaign. Melman, Mark Melman, I believe his name is, Democrat strategist as well. He's the one that pushed, that is the current political strategist of Yair Lapid as well. And so you've got this government that could come in power in the interim sense that might actually be worse, that might actually be worse than that of Naftali Bennett if Prime Minister Yair Lapid comes into power. This is what Netanyahu said, and this was when this coalition agreement was just being worked out. He was fearing what would happen if Yair Lapid came into power. He said this from the Knesset podium about 10 months ago. He said, the Prime Minister of Israel needs to be able to say no to the President of the United States on issues that threaten our existence. Then he went on to talk about how he was invited by Republicans to come and address the joint session of Congress before the nuclear deal, saying this is a horrible deal. You can't let it happen. It's going to empower the radical regime in Iran that wants to destroy us in America as well. It's suicidal. Why would you consider this? He stood up to the Obama government. He stood up to Obama, and Obama didn't like it. He went on to say, he said, who will do that now? Netanyahu said 10 months ago. Prime Minister Yair Lapid, this government does not want and is not capable of opposing the United States. It's not capable, and that's what we've seen even for the past 10 months. A United States government that is hell-bent on giving Iran access to nuclear weapons in a few years at the very least, and access to world financial markets. I mean, they're already doing that. They're already doing that. And you need somebody in the world to stand up and say, no, enough, what are we doing? This is crazy. That man was Prime Minister Netanyahu. That man is not Yair Lapid. He doesn't want to threaten the American-Israeli relationship. He believes that is more important, keeping that strong with whoever's in power, even if it's an anti-American, anti-Israeli government in power in the United States, doesn't matter. Preserve that relationship. That's what he says, at least. It doesn't matter if Iran's going to get nuclear weapons or on the road to nuclear weapons, or they're going to get flush with cash. We can't upset America, because what do we do? What do we do without America? Well, I think Netanyahu, for the past decade, has been trying to figure that out. In fact, every nation in the Middle East that was allied with the United States before Obama came into power is trying to figure out that precise question, the answer to that. What do we do when we have an pro-Iranian administration in the United States? Well, they band together. They band together, and that's why you have Israel right now penning a free trade agreement with the UAE. That's why you had the UAE foreign minister, Egyptian foreign minister, Bahraini foreign minister, Moroccan foreign minister down in Israel in the Negev 2 weeks ago. Because they're all worried that Iran is going to be empowered, not by the Russians, not by the Chinese, empowered by the United States of America. And what do we do then in the region? Well, you have to defend yourselves. And biblical prophecy talks about what's going to happen as well. As you see these nations, the Arab states, not just reach out to Israel for their defense, but also reach out for Europe in what's known as the Psalm 83 Alliance. But when you have this Yair Lapid character come along, a leader that is well-versed in politics, but he's never held the office of prime minister before, and he believes he's got similar morals, similar virtues as the Biden administration, the Obama administration. What's going to happen to the state of Israel? This is how Carolyn Glick characterized both the current government in the United States and the government in Israel as well.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that that's why this government in the United States, the administration, and the government in Israel that's now controlling the levers of power here are both threats to the very nature and to the very existence of our countries.
And so if you've been watching this program, you know that that is just super interesting. Here is somebody saying, an Israeli journalist, Israeli-American journalist, who has her finger on the pulse, and she's saying that what you see in America is America under attack by the Biden administration, the Obama administration, destroying its values from the inside out, destroying the nation. And then you see the same thing happening with this government inside Israel. These are both threats, she says, to the very nature and the very existence of our country. And that's true. And if you look at the United States and what they're doing, I mean, if you go back to what Mr. Flurry has written for a number of years now, over a decade, talking about this Iran nuclear deal and how bad it is and why the Obama administration went after it. And why Netanyahu was against it. And you see a government in Israel right now that is unwilling to stand toe-to-toe with Biden or Obama and say, no way do that deal. This is going to threaten our existence. At least they're not saying that publicly. They're not trying to wrangle support from the United States against this. You would say it's a bizarre move in terms of foreign policy, unless you understood America Under Attack. This is a book that Mr. Flurry has written that we're currently updating that should be out soon. America Under Attack. It's available for you for free. It talks about how through the Obama years, you had somebody in power that wanted and that sought after fundamentally transforming the United States and fundamentally transforming the United States' relationship with the world. And why does he do that? He does it because he comes in the spirit and embodies the spirit of an ancient historical character called Antiochus Epiphanes that is prophesied in the book of Daniel. And if you know your history, and if you've read that booklet, you know some of this history. Who was Antiochus Epiphanes against back in the 2nd century BC? He was against the Jewish state. And so when you see a hatred for the values and of the United States, why else would you want to fundamentally transform it? Then those values are based on the Bible. They are based on the values in the first five books of the Bible, the same values that underpin the modern state of Israel. And so the hatred there is not just against the United States, it's also against the state of Israel. It's also against the Jewish state. And so when you see an American leader that is empowering the adversaries of the United States and Israel, you've got to wonder, is he really just trying to recalibrate the Middle East, help everyone share the neighborhood, if only they could just get along? How do you do that? How do you negotiate someone that every Friday in Tehran says death to Israel, death to America? How do you sit down across the table from them and say, just please slow down your nuclear weapons program and here's a lot of money? That's basically what the nuclear deal is. Well, how do you explain that? You need to read America Under Attack. And you need to read, I think you've probably read it by now if you've been following this program from any length of time. There is also another article that I think is really essential to read. This was in the July 2020 Philadelphia Trumpet. It's entitled, What Will Happen After Trump Regains Power? And we do know, based on biblical prophecy, and this article goes through that if you want some extra proof on that, that President Trump will come back to power, will come back to power. And it is interesting that you see at the same time that Obama is basically telling Biden, you're on the way down, that in Israel, you see this same government that ousted, let's say, a figure that was quite strong in terms of conservative values. When you see those same things happen in the same time, perhaps it is that as Trump comes back to power, you might see his buddy in Israel come back to power in the form of Benjamin Netanyahu. But this article from Mr. Flurry kind of exposes and explains why President Obama was so much against Israel and so much for the Iran nuclear deal. Mr. Flurry writes this, respected columnist Lee Smith, someone we quote often because he's probably one of the best in the world that understands at least that Obama's foreign policy is not a naive mistake. A lot of people are coming around to this right now. Carolyn Glick's been on that probably for about the same time as Lee Smith. Melanie Phillips, 2 weeks ago basically said, there's no naivety here. This is deliberate. This is a deliberate policy of self-destruction for the United States and critically in the Middle East for the state of Israel because of the policies of Obama in his third term through Biden. Lee Smith says this, the alliance between Israel and the Gulf states is an impediment to the dream of a re-empowered nuclear-armed Iran backed by the United States, which was Obama's main foreign policy aim. That was it. Empower Iran. Why would you do that? Iran's chance death to America. Well, it's probably because we haven't just been nice enough to them. Well, no. No, that's being nice to them is not going to help, as we've seen. As we've seen, policies of strength is the only thing that protects anybody in the Middle East. And the Israelis know that. Then Mr. Flores says, note that Obama's main foreign policy aim was to align America with Iran, Israel's enemy and the world's number one terror sponsoring nation. Iran's main goal is to bring America down and to wipe Judah off the map. For America to support Iran makes no sense unless you realize that this leader is trying to blot out the name of Israel. Iranian leaders talk all about this all the time. This nation wants to blot out the name of Israel. That includes America and Britain. Yet Americans allowed their president to enact that foreign policy, and now that foreign policy is back. Biden is empowering Iran so it may soon obtain nuclear weapons. I am certain we will have more Palestinian terrorist attacks now because of who is in charge. He's saying, Mr. Flurry's writing less than a year ago, that don't be surprised if terrorist attacks happen in Israel because of Biden being in power in the United States. Have we seen that? Have we seen it? Are we seeing it? That's exactly what we're seeing. And then it says here, if this continues, it'll end very badly. You see how important it is that somebody needs to recover something. And what he's talking about there is a prophecy in 2 Kings chapter 14, which talks about the recovery of the American election. It prophesies about that. And is it so that we'll also see in a recovery of the power of Netanyahu here in Israel for a time? Now, this is continuing. You don't see these stories much on the American media, I doubt. This one comes from the Free Beacon. It is an American media source, but you're not going to see it that often. It says, Iranian ghost armada ferries $22 billion worth of illicit oil to China. So under the current sanctions that America has on Iran, this is illegal. America can go stop this. They should stop this. The point of the sanctions is to stop Iran getting money, so it can stop terrorist attack activities, ballistic missile weapons tests, funding other terrorist proxies around the Middle East and the world, and slow down their nuclear program. That's the purpose of the sanctions. And yet the United States is knowingly right now allowing Iran to sell its oil to China. $22 billion worth have been bought by China from Iran and since Biden came into office. It talks about this, and we won't quote this article too much. It just says this, Iran's fleet comprising 182 foreign-owned and flagged ships operates with little interference from the United States. It's according to UANI. This is the United Against a Nuclear Iran outfit. It is known as Tehran's Ghost Armada because these ships often obfuscate their position at sea and turn off their trackers, a violation of maritime law, so that they can evade detection. So this is happening. It goes through a bunch of these ships. Four of them have connections to the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps that was formerly headed up by Quds Force. The Quds Force was at least by Qasem Soleimani, who Trump killed. And you see, these are the sponsors of the Houthis in Yemen, firing on ships, firing on the UAE and Saudi Arabia almost daily. These are the sponsor of Hezbollah as well. And the United States has these ships under sanction, and they are getting the money. The United States is letting them do that, getting the money from sales to China and paying the IRGC, which then what do they do with the money? Well, you can guess. Another story here, Russia using weapons smuggled by Iran from Iraq against Ukraine. So this is what we're looking at here. You've got the Russians needing some really heavy missiles and launches and things like that. And they're getting them from the Iranian-backed militia in Iraq, travel to Iran, and then sent up, sent on ships, actually. They can track the ships, and that happened in early April, going to support Putin's takeover of Ukraine. So what this you might think is something that you would consider what Iran would do. It's par for the course. However, it comes from the PMF. How does the PMF, this is the Popular Mobilization Units, they're the Iranian-backed militia in Iraq. They used to be just the Iranian-backed militias that fought against the United States, that have the blood of over 600 American soldiers on their head. That's the militias that answered to Iran. And what happened in the fight against the Islamic State? The United States decided it was good to use them in the fight against the Islamic State. And so they became enmeshed right into the Iraqi military itself in 2016. And what does that do? Well, it gives them access to a lot of weapons. It gives them access to a large amount of weapons. Some of those weapons even American-made, that America gave to the Iraqi security forces. And so now you have these weapons, some of these weapons that come from Iraq, they're going to Iran. Iran is giving them to Russia. That's what's happening even this week. So think about these nuclear negotiations that are ongoing, that are almost complete for a moment. You have the United States of America that wants to do a deal with Iran. And you have other people at the table, some European countries. You have Russia and China. Now, whose side is Russia and China on? They're on the Iranian side. This is what they're saying. And the United States is basically outsourcing a lot of the negotiations of the nuclear deal to Russia. And so how do you expect it to end up? Is it going to be favorable for the United States? Is it going to be favorable for the state of Israel? Obviously, it's not. Israelis are terrified of that. I think even Yair Lapid's probably terrified of a Iranian bomb. He came out with a statement with Naftali Bennett and said, we just heard that the United States is considering delisting the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the most famous, largest terror-sponsoring entity in the world. The Biden administration is considering putting that off the terrorist list. And they said that surely wouldn't happen. They didn't say don't do it. They said, we can't even believe this story is true, because that would be absolutely crazy. So perhaps even them, they're getting worried as well at what the United States is planning. But I think this is so important, what we see going on right now, this change that took place last week, both in the United States and here in Israel. You're having the demise of these governments. What's going to replace it on the interim? Probably not something that's the best. Probably something that is quite aligned in terms of Obama's policies and Yair Lapid's policies internally in their own country. And they're pushing a lot of left-wing, anti-biblical, let's put it that way, values on the Israeli population right now. That's what they're doing. And you see a lot of the transgender issues, things like that. They're being pushed the same on the Israelis as they are being pushed in the United States as well right now. So what in the meantime, we might not see a quick response to, let's say, a return of Benjamin Netanyahu. It looks like that could happen in the future, because the Bible says that God wants to give Israel, this little Jewish state, also the United States, also Great Britain, Australia. He wants to be merciful, and he wants to give them another opportunity, another chance to repent, to change, to recognize their bad decisions, and to go back to him. Now, President Trump coming into power, I mean, that's not like this massive push towards biblical morals. Not at all. It might use a bit of strength to uphold the United States values for a time, uphold the Constitution for a time, but as Mr. Flurry writes, in America Under Attack and Great Again, it's going to take societal change. It's going to take societal change to bring lasting change to the people. And really, that's something that is not going to happen, not until Jesus Christ returns. But what we know from these prophecies, from the book America Under Attack, and even from this article, what will happen after Trump regains power, you know that what we see with Iran, what we see with Israel and the United States and the crumbling governments here, that's what is happening. It's all leading to the coming of the Messiah, as the Israelis would say, or the second coming of Jesus Christ. That's what it's pushing towards. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do a short Bible study on what it means for the veil to be removed, something that is pictured during this Passover season. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
As we were discussing in that first segment, the reason that we know that President Trump is going to return is because God the Father does want to have mercy on the nations of Israel and give them another chance to recognize him and his impact in their nations, and for them to turn to him individually. This is something that we can all do. But how is this possible on an individual level? And this has everything to do with the Passover, which begins here in Jerusalem in just a few hours. And it actually is symbolized also by an event that took place during Passover day, right at the death of Christ 2,000 years ago, that's recorded in the Bible. Matthew 27, verse 51 says this, "And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in two from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake and the rocks rent." And so inside the temple, you might recall, there was the holy place, which was the main, the largest part of the temple, the buildings, the structure itself, where the priests could go. And then you had another separation, another room separated by a large veil, which is talking about here. This is a curtain that separated the holy place from the Holy of Holies, where the Ark of the Covenant was, where on top of the Ark was the mercy seat, which typifies God's throne. And anciently, all the way up until this moment, the moment of Christ's death and then his resurrection 3 days later, it was impossible for mankind to access the throne of God in terms of access to God the Father himself. We often forget this. But up until that point, when God is referred to and God is having a relationship with people in the Old Testament, who was that with? Well, you can go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 4 and know that this is referring to the Word, the other God being that would become Jesus Christ. He is the God of the Old Testament. And then God himself, or God the Father, though, didn't have contact with the people. This all changed. And Jesus Christ was so excited about this. If you are observing the Passover tonight, you'll read several passages of his final, that discuss his final conversations with the disciples. And several times throughout that, you'll see that Jesus Christ is excited. Why? Because he is going to get to go to his Father, and that us, sinners, people that sin, people that put a separation between us and God, people that are in need of mercy, are going to be able to access that throne room through the intercession of Jesus Christ. This is how Tomorrow's World in November 1971 describes this event that took place right at Christ's death, the rending of this veil. It says this: "No one but the high priest ever went into the Holy of Holies past the veil, and he only once a year as an act of making atonement and asking forgiveness for the sins of Israel before God's throne. After Christ died and was resurrected, he went to God's heavenly throne to intercede for us as our high priest. The rending of the veil was symbolic of the fact that men now had direct access to the Father through a perfect high priest. Christ's perfect sacrifice tore down the barrier, the veil of sin, between men and God, and the physical rending of the veil was a type of that spiritual event." So while the Passover that we are about to observe is an incredibly somber event, memorializing, thinking on the suffering and the death that Jesus Christ went through for in our stead and in the stead of the entire world, we have to recall too what it would open up. It would open up a relationship with God the Father himself, a relationship all the way up to the mercy seat, the real mercy seat that is at God's throne. And Jesus Christ, he's not still dead. He's alive as our living Savior, as Mr. Flurry has been talking about. And he acts right now to intercede on our behalf. When we sin, it's like we're stitching up that veil. But if we repent, if we change, if we ask for forgiveness, then Jesus Christ's blood, that goes through the veil, and we're able to access the Father once again. This is an incredible miracle. It's something that Jesus Christ was so excited about. And he was thinking about acting in this capacity as our high priest, even on the last night of his life. If you want to know more about what Jesus Christ is doing right now, I definitely suggest that you read and request a free booklet written by Mr. Gerald Flurry on the book of Hebrews. This, again, can be sent to you wherever you are in the world. It shows you that we don't worship a dead Savior. He is alive. He's active. He's our advocate. He's our intercessor. He's busy, particularly when we sin, taking his blood before the Father so that we can maintain the important relationship with God the Father, the only way that we are able to obtain mercy. If you want that booklet, you can go to thetrumpet.com and the literature tab will take you there, or you can write an email to td@thetrumpet.com requesting that. Thanks for being with me today. I hope you have a wonderful evening.